Hello, Chris. How you doing?
Good. We got Trisha on the line here.
Perfect. Perfect. It's kind of funny because I didn't recognize the 415 number. And so... I'm like, that's not from New York City. That's like California.
Hey, I can be in two places at once. Can't you do that?
Exactly. So, all right. So now we'll kind of start the process all over again. But Trisha, I was just kind of giving you a little bit of your background. I think rather than me kind of trying to hit or miss, I'm going to just give a brief, like 2-3 sentence piece. And then I'm going to have you kind of fill in the different pieces to the puzzle. But you've done a lot of tremendous things in the sporting industry, either be it from in the area of being a sports model, being a trainer, doing triathlons, living on two continents. I would really, if you could kind of give our listeners a little background on yourself and what you've done in your career to this point.
Okay. So I can start to when I was young, what got me into this.
Yes.
I think we all kind of, when we're younger, we either turn to sports or we don't turn to sports and we turn to other things in life. But I had sort of a different upbringing and was kind of shuffled around when I was younger. My parents passed away, and so I went from home to home. And my way to kind of deal with this controversy was to dive into sports. I would turn to running mostly when things just got too hectic at home. I would sneak out my window at night and just go run. It was the only way I could like deal with the stress. I also grew up playing soccer. That was one of my sports for about 15 years, and then track and cross country. But at the same time, I was kind of put from foster home to foster home. And then I was finally adopted when I was 7 years old by a family that we didn't really see eye to eye, and they didn't really allow me to be myself and kind of wanted to control me and be who they wanted me to be. And so even though I was a straight-A student in varsity sports and popular and all that, it just didn't really work between us, and they kicked me out when I was 14. So I lived on the streets, lived with friends, lived in my girlfriend's horse barn, different places, but continued to, and I think one of the driving forces was they said to me that I would never amount to anything, that I would never make anything of my life. And so I think that was kind of the driving force to where I am now. And I sort of transfer that to my clients and friends and whoever come to me for advice. But it was, everyone has two paths they can take in life. They can either choose to be the victim and live a life that way, or get up every day and face life head on and make the most of each day. And so that's kind of what I decided to do when I was 14. Mostly it was in sports and academics. And I was very hard on myself and expected a lot from myself. And I think very often we're our own worst critic. So I ended up excelling in sports and school, worked two jobs myself through college. It was then I was sort of introduced to running running events, 10Ks, 5Ks, which then later turned into half marathons, which is kind of a funny story. I was living in California, and my roommate at the time, she was very competitive, and she's like, I'm training for the San Diego half marathon. I'm like, oh, that sounds really cool. And she's like, you should do it, but you probably can't do it because you've only been running 5 miles. And I'm like, well, when is it? She said, it's in 2 weeks. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And I ended up doing it. I 2 weeks of training, whatever. I want to say I think my time was around 1:37, and I ended up beating her, and she was kind of mad. But that bug sort of got me into doing half marathons, which then turned into marathons. And then a little later, I started dating a guy that was a professional triathlete, and he wanted me to get in triathlons. And I said, I can't do triathlons. I almost drowned when I was younger. I'm terrified of water. And he's like, come on, but you'd be so good. You're such an amazing athlete. And I'm like, all right. So I remember my first sprint distance. I'm standing there at the start line, hyperventilating, completely thinking I'm going to pass out because I can't breathe. I don't even remember how it went because the whole swim was kind of black to me, but triathlons, if any of you have done them, are mostly about the run, how you finish it. and I ended up coming in first in my age group. So then the sprint distance turned to Olympic distance, which then turned to half Ironman, which then turned to my endless pursuit of trying to do Ironmans for 10 years. And I finally now went back to doing really what I love, which is running and also stair races. I just competed in the Empire State Building and came in seventh, which is, if any of you have heard of it, it's actually pretty competitive. It's one of the biggest stair races in the world, and you have to actually be invited to do it or selected to do it, and people come from all over the world to do this 13, 14-minute event. So I was pretty happy that I came. Well, I came in seventh, but I think I could have done better. They didn't put me in the elite group. They said I had to prove myself, so I was in the very last wave. So I had to, yeah, it kind of sucks. So I had to fight my way to the top, but it just makes me want to come back next year and work harder. So Stephen also mentioned that I do sports modeling, which I do also. I got into that because I saw, having done sports all my life, and when I was young, I always wanted to be a model, but I never really had the height for it as far as, like, fashion. You know, I wasn't 5'9", 5'10", I'm only 5'7". So I was watching a commercial one day, and it was really cool. The girl was in black and white. She comes jumping out of a hot tub and runs across Golden Gate Bridge, and it was for Nike. And I was like, that is so cool. I'm going to get my portfolio together, and I'm going to do that. I want to work for Nike. And so I got pictures together, and a little time later, I got with a sports agent, Sports Unlimited, and my first job was shooting for Nike, and my second job was shooting for Nike, and it was shooting with the girl that I saw in the commercial. So it was really cool. I went on to shoot quite a bit of shooting with Carrie Payton, who was the female model. But I had the opportunity to travel around the world with Nike for quite a few years. I guess I've modeled kind of off and on for them for like the last 20 years. But it was, you know, such a compliment to be, you know, selected by them. I was also their Asian fit model. And to represent such an amazing, you know, client. And among them, I've worked for pretty much every other athletic company. So with that being said, my whole world is sort of surrounded by health and fitness and athletic endeavors and trying to always achieve and never settling for just okay. That then turned to the other part of my life, which is coaching and training people. I just was doing what I always loved, what came to me naturally, and people would come up to me in college and after college, hey, you know, how do you stay so fit? How did you train for that race? You know, and just started coming to me for advice, and then they said, you know, you really should coach and train people. And so I started doing that about 17 years ago now. I started doing it actually for money and getting paid to help people. And I really found out how rewarding it is. And taking, you know, maybe I had a lot of adversity when I was young, but it enabled me to have a lot of compassion and patience and empathy and understanding for people. And so I've been able to train people all the way from kids that were 5 years old, up to people that are 81 years old, from professional athletes to the woman that, you know, the housewife that has gained, you know, 50 pounds or whatever and just wants to have a pursuit of passion. And so it's not definitely, I would say, the reward of my job is being able to see my client build the self-confidence and self-esteem in them and to meet their goals, something that they thought was never obtainable, to run their first 5K when they never thought it was possible. And Stephen was saying that I live in the south of France. I just want to jump to another story. I work with a lot of Russian clients there, and Russian girls don't really do sports growing up. It's not really in the nature over there. So I was working with one for about the last 2.5 years, and she knew that my passion was running. And she said, Tricia, she said, I'll tell you right now, I know you're a runner. She said, you will never get me to run. But you know how you kind of rub off on people? when they see you getting up and running and, oh, you've got such nice legs and, oh, whatever it is, you know. So one day I went to her. She bought all this Stella McCartney running gear,
yes,
whatever it takes, and she said, I want you to teach me to run. And I was like, okay. So we started slowly with a heart rate monitor to make sure that she wasn't, you know, she was training in her zone and everything. And yes, now she runs like 3 times a week, 30 minutes a day. And I never told her to do it. She just decided this is what she wanted for herself. That is one thing I have to tell you. In my profession, I can't sit there and tell you to do something. You have to be the instigator. You have to come to me. And it's generally, I find, when people are sick and tired of being sick and tired, of making excuses, of getting up every day, looking in the mirror and saying, this is not the life that I want. This is not, you know, we're all in charge of our lives. And so it's been great to be able to, you know, jumpstart people that way of doing what I love to do. But to tell anyone and show anyone, you know, you can really obtain anything in life. You just have to set your mind to it. And maybe that was those words that were ringing in my ears from my adopted parents saying that I would never amount to anything. You know, maybe that's just been sort of my motto, to never, never settle, to never give up, to never stop believing that anything is possible. I've worked very hard to where I am in my life, and it's been a lot of hard work. You know, people always see the end result, but they don't know all the blood, sweat, and tears you put into the middle process, which then leads me to, you guys might be wondering why I live in the south of France.
Yeah.
It was sort of, it's sort of one of those love at sight, you know, romantic stories, fall in love with a French guy in California, go back to France with him. And that's kind of what I did. If many of you don't know, it's where a lot of English people and English-speaking people will go for a vacation during the summer. And so he said, hey, it'd be a perfect opportunity for you to work with English-speaking clientele on their yachts and villas, you know, and travel with them and everything. And it sounded so enticing. I was like, perfect. You know, but if any of you guys have ever started a job, you don't started a company, you don't just go over there and snap your fingers and like that. But it was walking from villa to villa and yacht to yacht and handing out my business cards when it was 95 blistering degrees outside and saying, hire me, you know. And, you know, and then to say to them, you know, hey, I'm on vacation. Why do I want to be working out while I'm on vacation? So long story short, it took two and a half years to, and also to be able to work in a foreign country, you have to, if you're going to do it legally, you have to get papers, you have to get a work visa, which took me 2.5 years to obtain. And I finally got that, even though my ex-French boyfriend said I would never be able to do it. It was like my adopted parents ringing in my ear. Again, someone else, you know, we all have people in our lives that always say, you know, you'll never be able to do it. You can't do it. And that just kind of catapults me to the next stage and say, yes, I will. I will show you.
Yes.
So I worked very hard, got my work visa, business license, had then the ability to work in the south of France. Not only that, it's all the walking around to all the different villas and boats and yachts and people's homes and everything. You know, people started calling me, coming back, hey, I got your flyer a couple years ago. I heard you from a friend. So everything kind of started coming to fruition. You know, our hard work doesn't always pay off exactly when we want it to, but somehow it always comes through, you know, whether it be through other opportunities or other people or friends. So it came about, I guess, let's say, not last summer, but the summer before. And at that time, I also had the ability to work at the famous Hotel du Cap, where you have all the actors and actresses come for the Cannes Film Festival and very important people, high wealth and famous people from all over the world stay there. And it took me 3 years to finally get in there because when I first moved to France and asked if I could have a job there, they said, do you have a work visa? And I said, no. They said, sorry, come back, what do you do? So I went back 6 months later, can I get a job here? And they're like, did you get your papers yet? I said, I'm in the process. Come back when you do. Came back again the next summer. Can I get a job here? Have you done the business? I'm still in the process. So anyway, after 2 years, I finally went there. I said, all right, I have my papers. Can I get a job here? So
it had nothing to do with the qualifications. It's just whether you got papers.
Well, you know, and that was, and I kept telling him, I said, you know, I'll be very good for you guys. I'm very good at what I do. So, you know, I was obviously able to prove myself. And because about 90% of the clientele are from L.A., you know, Hollywood and New York, people generally feel comfortable working with someone that they can actually speak the language with and understand, you know, the ways of America and stuff like that. So I was really able to help the masses of Americans that go stay at this hotel, which then led me to clients in New York. Because the south of France is pretty much a seasonal place and everything closes down between November until about middle April, beginning of May, I needed to find a source of work for the winter, and that's when I started coming to New York and working with my clients here and then working, you know, with other clients as well. And so currently I am in New York, and it's kind of cool because then I get to see them on my home turf in France during the summer. And then also another facet of my life that I like to do, which I discussed with Stephen, is I really like to, and because of my upbringing, when I'm not working with clients in that capacity, I like to work, volunteer my time and work with homeless and low-income children. Because I believe us as adults and us that have been there, done that, we have the compassion and empathy and the drive to show these kids that maybe self-esteem isn't really big, or maybe they don't have some peer group that's really, you know, telling them to go after their dreams and inspire them to do better and be better in academics and sports. So that's kind of another facet that I'm trying to open up in my life because I get a lot of reward from that. So that's, I guess, kind of my story in a nutshell.
Cool. Well, see, I think I asked her, you know, to do this. And this is Stephen again. I apologize. I left there for a minute. But I specifically asked Krisha to talk about it because there's so much depth here to somebody that has gone from what would be considered as the beginning where it was not healthy or, oh, shoot, I wasn't given the silver spoon to now.
Far from it.
Yes, to now in a position where you're working with clients that obviously have a little bit of money to spend on training. And whereas other trainers, you know, are looking for those few that are willing to pay $25 an hour, you know, for the training. And you've been able to develop that up. Now, this is the last. We've only got... You mentioned earlier that you only have a short amount of time today, and I really want to get to the other part of the pieces. Okay, let's talk to a youth athlete or somebody that is obviously, you know, maybe in the 10 to 13, 14 range, and they have been bullied, and they have been told that they can't do it, or they may have weigh a little bit more than, you know, they're not as pretty as...
Stephen, you're breaking up. Can you hear me?
Yes, actually, I can hear you. I do hear a little bit.
Okay. You're just breaking up a little bit. But what I would tell them, because, you know, I was 14 when I was kicked out, and, you know, again, because I was living on the streets and owned by the state, I had to go to therapy every week, which, you know, now as an adult, I mean, I guess I'm very thankful for. But, I mean, I had my parents, my adopted parents, saying constantly, you're no good, you'll never amount to anything, even though I was the perfect student, the perfect athlete. And you just have to, again, I mean, for a kid that's, you know, and that's what's unfortunate about some of these youth that are, you know, because I've worked in Harlem, I've worked in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, where these kids, you know, they don't have the peer group that's saying, hey, anything in life is possible. And these kids, you know, it's just, this is what I would love to do, is to get a group of these kids together and speak with these kids and just be like, look, if I can do it, I mean, I lived on the streets. I lived in my house, in my girlfriend's horse barn. I got up before school, ran to her house, took a shower, and went to school. A child, whether it be a boy or a girl, you just have to decide, you know, this is not the life that I want. This is not the life that I deserve. I deserve more than this. And they just have to find it within themselves. And it's hard. I mean, trust me, it was hard. All I knew was survival. All I knew is the life that I didn't want. And, you know, it was difficult when I was sleeping out on a park bench and when someone was pulling a switchblade on me. You know, it's, I mean, you look at me now and you'd be like, no way, you were never like that. But like I said earlier, you know, for you have a choice. And for these kids, maybe try to see if they can find a group, you know, somewhere in their area, you know, a positive, because, you know, you can probably Google it, but to find a group that's going to inspire them, that's going to push them, and, you know, and not to be, because, you know, we become a product of who we surround ourselves with. So if we surround ourselves with negative, complaining people all the time, it's very hard to be positive. It's very hard to look, you know, at the glass half full, right? Yep. So I would suggest to these, you know, the kid that's the underdog, whatever, that's, you know, being bullied and being picked on and saying you'll never amount to anything, they need to go find somewhere in their community a group of kids, a group of adults, whatever it be. They need to surround themselves to be constantly heard all the positive things in life. And, I mean, if I could be everywhere at once, I would want to speak to every one of these children and say, look, if I can do it, you can do it. You know? And
it's, absolutely. Now, I'm going to go one other piece, too, because I think the curiosity part that I have is you didn't have an adult that was telling you right from wrong. But then you had all this negative information being put into your mind as well.
Right.
How
did
you come to the realization of what would be a good path and what would be a bad path?
Well, you know, Stephen, I was very fortunate that I was raised on Mercer Island, which is a very, very wealthy community. So, like, my junior, freshman or sophomore, I remember I had my little garbage bag full of stuff, and I would go from one girlfriend's home to one. I think I lived with 13 different friends my sophomore year with my little garbage bag full of stuff. And so it was kind of like a game to them. And because, you know, being, you know, the parents, it was almost like a, you know, never-ending sleepover with my girlfriends. So, but they didn't understand all the turmoil I was feeling inside. I mean, every day it was get up, survival, survival, survival. And so after that, you know, you can only stay, you know, at so many friends' homes before you kind of run out of friends. And then that's when I was, you know, and this whole time I'm owned by the States, I had to go live in these halfway homes, which are basically a room about 15 feet by maybe 15 feet, lined up with cots, with girls that were around my age, 12, 13, 14, that were on drugs, prostitutes, you know, pregnant. And so when I looked, I guess to answer your question, when I looked at what I saw, and I was so much more polished, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but they always came to me like I was the counselor. So I guess I kind of felt like I had to be a good role model for them. And again, to answer your question, when my parents said that I would never amount to anything, yet I was, you know, a straight A student or 3.9 or whatever, and I was on the varsity sports, and so I knew that I wasn't, you know, some troubled kid on drugs or alcohol or whatever, even though that's the way that they portrayed me. I just knew that that's what I wanted in life. And so I guess I kind of had to be my own biggest fan. But at the same time, it was really hard. I kind of isolated myself because I didn't trust anyone, you know, because I was moving from home to home every 6 months, 6 to 9 months, you know, the first 7 years of my life. So I guess I just had to do it. And I found later in life, when I was, like, in college and I had my first long, serious 6-year relationship, I gravitated towards guys that were that came from stable families, who, you know, like, good Christian or Catholic families, and their parents were still married. So I gravitated towards sort of that setting, even though that was completely opposite. I think maybe somewhere, maybe on a subconscious mind, that's really what I've wanted, and I've still strived to someday hopefully have that, you know, that foundation. But I don't know. I guess I just, I guess I knew where what I didn't want, Stephen. I don't know if that makes sense, but
absolutely, because it's almost Because that's the thing I keep hearing from your story is that, okay, you obviously were raised with no particular structure, no particular type of raising. You know, how did you end up picking it? Now, Chris, you had mentioned you had a couple of questions as well.
Well, Tricia, this is Chris Worth out here. You know, I first of all, I love when I prepare people or when we have people on, I always creep the heck out of them on Facebook. So I always like to I always like to see how many friends do we have in common. So first of all, when you get the friend request from me, you got to accept it. Just blank there. But I love that we got a lot. So Erin DeMoranis, she's a friend of ours that we had on the show last week, and we'll be referring. But I see you have a lot of Minnesota connections here. So Peter Spencer, a long friend of mine from Lifetime Fitness. Paul Phillips, a photographer here from Minnesota, and a couple other folks. Have you been to Minnesota before, or did you you spent time here?
I did for a couple photo shoots, and that was about it. But I think it was probably friends of friends in the triathlon and running community, or it might be through the modeling. But I did I think it was Life Fitness there, maybe, and also. Well, Octane Fitness, was that in Minnesota? No, that was in I think that was in Minnesota also. So
and you got some good coaching buddies on here. Sharon Osgood and Rachel Sears are good friends of mine from California, and we've coached clients together before. And obviously, you got some of the John Dukes and such like, and Bob Sibahars of the big world. So but the one question I have is I always look for people who are friends of Cole Stewart. And I'm wondering if you have ever met Cole in person.
No, I haven't. Sharon, I know. I used to do the triathlon. I used to be a guest speaker and work with Tri California, that Sharon did also. And then John Duke, I used to shoot ads for Triathlete magazine all the time and did their swimsuit edition. So that's how I know John Duke from the, Ironman world. But no, I don't know Cole Stewart.
He's the only person in the world I've ever met that has his name spelt the same as my son. So I'm always looking for somebody. The only person I know his old coach or one of his old clients was Barb Lindquist, who is a friend of mine. So that's kind of the connection that I have. But I've always looked for somebody who's met him before, because I'm always looking to try at some point in time run into him. But he's out of Australia, so it's a little bit difficult.
Yes. No, I've been to Australia, but I haven't met him yet.
All right.
Well, Tricia, we've come to the end, I think.
I have a few more minutes if anyone wants to ask any more questions.
Oh, well, if that you do, because this is a critical part. If you could give an idea of how, do you actually train the same customers in France and New York City? You actually go back and forth with them?
So what it is, like I was mentioning earlier, that the season closes, or a lot of the businesses close in the south of France during the summer or during the winter. And so when I originally was going to New York for my birthday, which is September 11th, and so they said, hey, the way it kind of started is they said, hey, if you're going to be in New York, look me up. And I said, sure, okay. And then I kind of thought, well, maybe I could try, living here for a little bit since everything closes in the south of France. So that's kind of the way that it started. And I started, of course, they've got their trainers here, but I'd work with them maybe an extra day a week or on the weekends. And then it would turn to I'd train their son or their brother-in-law. And then it just kind of went from friend to friend. And so now it's just, I work with them sometimes. And I have a whole other group of clients that I work with and also coach some athletes here too. So it's been great. It's a very, very diverse group of people that I work with, and everyone from all walks of life, and it's my passion. So I always get up every day and I'm like, I never have to work a day in my life, because I know that I do, and it's not work.
Exactly. All righty. Well, we do have to I'm going to let you go, because I do have lots of questions, but I think you've been gracious enough to come back on the show in the near future. We had talked about that previously. We would love to have you back, because I think...
Yes. I hope my story resonated or inspired people, hopefully.
Yes, well, I think it does. I really do, because this day, like, in Rogers, Minnesota, I'm talking my city, I know of people that have been bullied, and it is so prevalent nowadays that the people just don't understand where they're going. You know what I mean? Kids just don't get that feedback. And to hear a story like yours, I think is fantastic. That will give them hope that they can make good decisions and that you can pull yourself out of a negative situation. You don't have to be a victim.
No.
You don't have to be there. So
right. You know, but it takes work, Stephen. It takes work. You know, maybe we can set something up and I can come out and, you know, speak to them personally, live. And, you know, but it takes work, but it can be done. But, you know, you've got to – I mean, I don't think you could have been any lower than where I was. And you have to believe that there's a better life. And I just wrote one more thing that I want to mention real quickly. Since my parents would never listen to what I had to say, I would write all my feelings through poems. But the poems, the way I always ended the poems was always on a positive note of, like, you know, that basically the theme of it was that there's a better life out there. So I always kind of had that glimmer of hope, you know, that light at the end of the tunnel. So I don't know. Hopefully we can move forward with this in some capacity.
Oh, absolutely. And we would, because we are doing some events this summer. And if it all works out, like, well, the next time we talk, let's just look to get on the phone, and I'll kind of fill you in a little bit, because there are, I think, opportunities for that. But where can people get a hold of you if they would like to?
They can email me if they want, and then we could, you know, set up a time. We can talk live if they want. I mean, you're welcome to give them my email address.
Okay. Then let's just do this. If you have any questions or would like to get a hold of Tricia, why don't you email us at McCarthy@themccarthyproject.com, and then we'll forward out your emails to you, and then if you next day, we'll get you back in touch with them. I think that'd be a great idea.
Of course. Any of you listeners out there, I'd be more than happy to help you, and, you know, you can do it. There's nothing in life that you can't do it, but you have to be the first person to put your foot forward when you decide that you're sick and tired of being sick and tired and you want to live, truly live. Only you can make that decision, and I'll be more than willing to help you with it to move forward.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Tricia.
Yes, you're welcome. Have a great day, you guys.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Unbelievable. Can you believe that
wow.
She actually started? I mean, when she told me that story the first time, I was like, how in the world did you even know what was right and wrong? You know what I mean? I mean, she didn't have any structure. Nobody to tell her what.
You know, it's out of adversity, though, that some of the greatest people in this world have risen. You know, that's like a phoenix. I mean, you look at her, and she's got everything in the world to fuel her passion and her fire. And she does it in such a positive way. It doesn't go, you know, there's obviously a number of different roads that could have went negatively for her. You know, as far as, you know, she could have turned to addiction. I mean, she did turn to an addiction with athletics, but, you know, chemical or alcohol addiction. And she is an amazing story. I'm telling you, there are people that I run into in this business that are motivational speakers. They tell about, you know, tales of adversity. She's definitely one that I'm going to keep in my back pocket to say if you ever need somebody to talk, she's got to be right up there with it.
And that's the thing. I mean, you just think about it. I mean, to live on your own at 14, and then, I mean, she didn't give me your website, but I'm going to give it out to everybody. It's TrishaO'Hara.com. And if you go there, you look at her client list. I mean, it's the client list that everybody would want. You know what I mean? And it just, it's amazing how you find the little diamonds all over of people like this. But any other
questions? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's, and what a life, I mean, for her, you know, traveling between the United States, working in the south of France. I mean, there's a billion people out there that would kill for that setup. And it seems like she has just risen to the top. I mean, she's risen like cream every time. And I mean, she's beautiful. She's very articulate. She's obviously super knowledgeable. She's talented. I mean, the list of what she can do is far outweighs the list of what she can't. And it just always surprises me that there's people out there somewhere in this world that at some point in time put her down. And you just want to go and just slap them across the face and say, what are you doing? I mean, not literally, but, you know, figuratively. If I did that, then I'd probably be in breach of something. But, you know, she's an incredible talent. And you could just see how she could speak for hours on the topic of motivation and achieving goals. And just an amazing person, and I'd hire her as a coach.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, when you get to a coach like that has higher expectations for you, and not in a negative way, not a power tripping expectations, but just saying to you, you know what, I'm going to hold you to a higher bar because I know you can. Not because I'm better and I'm going to do it because I'm a great coach. It's because I know you can be better. Unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to go to break, and then we're going to come back, and we'll probably just close down the show maybe 10, 15 minutes early today.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, yes.
Woo, you know what's after that.
Yes. Yes, we'll talk about that too.
So okay.
All right, man. Just talk to you on the other side.
Five Star Basketball, the leader in basketball instruction and camps. Endorsed by Michael Jordan, Dick Vitale, and Hubie Brown, and where the teaching never stops. Five Star Basketball Minnesota will be hosting a one-day instructional camp on May 18th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and will be hosted by Five Star, The McCarthy Project, and Grassroots Hoops. For more information on the camp, visit themccarthyproject.com/5-star. XL Athlete is the leading provider of online strength and conditioning and speed development camps. For more information on their training programs and speed development camps, visit xlathlete.com.
Well, we are back, and now we are on to we had originally thought that Trisha was going to be able to stay longer. We had originally set her up for two segments, but she had, we had spoke this morning about she had a meeting at 1:30 that she had to leave for. So I apologize. We're probably going to cut the show just a little bit short today, and that she wasn't able to stay long. But I just really want everybody to get a feel for who Trisha is, because, and Chris and I were talking about during the break, unbelievable that she could pull herself from a place that most people, I mean, think about the environment that she said she was in the state. She was owned by the state. She was around a bunch of prostitution, druggies, people that were pregnant. And she was the one that everybody was going to for information when she was essentially in the same spot. But even then, the leadership pieces and the ability to help people was still available. Amazing story. So with that, we're going to move on to our next piece of the puzzle, which is today in about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes. We're going to have Kelly Jackal from the movie 42 on. She has a very extensive background. She is, she's actually the great-granddaughter of Branch Rickey, who is actually the manager in the 42 movie, which is an amazing connection. She's a fantastic singer. She has, I mean, if you go onto YouTube, they say she's going into studio, and it's like, did she just pull this one out, just walking in there, and that's what she did? Or is that like after three or four takes or whatever? I don't know, but she is an amazing singer. She's been on numerous singing competitions. She's sang at national anthems, the San Francisco 49ers, the Sacramento Kings, all those guys, all those are on YouTube. Amazing thing. I'm just looking forward to getting her. I mean, I'm just curious to see what, if she actually talked to Branch Rickey and all that kind of stuff. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I mean, you would think so. Who knows? I would say you would think so. But I'm excited. I mean, this is, Stephen, let's be honest. This is the biggest fish who's landed in our live well yet. Yeah. And you know, we've put a whole bunch of preparation into this. And I mean, just the fact that that this is making us one of the broadcasts of the week, you know, for Blog Talk is great. And I've this woman, I think, is an incredible talent, and just goes to show you what she can do with not only acting but with singing. And I'm anxious to hear more about what's coming up, because I've seen more and more of the trailers for this movie, and it looks like it's going to be pretty intense. And just love to hear a little bit more about it and her take on it and how she got involved and what she has coming down the pike also.
Yeah, because I mean, the Jackie Robinson story is, I mean, when you did, cause you watch the trailer and he gets plunked on the head, you know, and they're purposely doing it, and you look at it, I knew that I had to be better than everybody else, not only on the field but off the field. I mean, to have that type of pressure, we're not just talking, hey, I could go out and hit a ball. he knew he had to be better in many other ways.
Well, just the historical factor of it all, you know, in order to be, you know, considered even, you had to be 10 times better. And that's and that kind of just goes along the theme of like what we're talking about today, is that adversity, you know, just forces you to rise above yourself. And I think that's really what brought him through. And, you know, the history has shown that he was an incredible person. And I hope the movie reflects the same.
Done. Well, any other closing thoughts before we prepare for 2 o'clock Pacific? It's funny because you sit there and never. I'll tell you a quick story. One of the
you're saying 2 o'clock. You're 2 o'clock Central, not Pacific.
Yes, you're right.
You said 2 o'clock Pacific. That would be 3 o'clock here, or that'd be noon here. So that would have been, you know, it would have been over with. So we want to make sure we're giving people the right time.
2 o'clock Central, 12 Pacific.
Correct.
There you go.
And if you're in Guam, I don't know what that is, but just saying, you can always podcast it. Go back and listen to it afterwards.
All righty. Anything else before we shut her down for the day?
That's all I got.
Cool. All right, Chris. Well, we'll talk to you in about an hour and 15 minutes, and looking forward to it.
All right. Take care, everybody. Have a good day.
Yes. Again, I watch it. I mean, to think about the idea of adversity. I mean, when you think about Jackie Robinson and the Trisha O'Haras of the world, where they have literally pulled themselves out of nowhere. And it's funny because as we're starting to build the show, you know, Trisha really did encourage it. I have to admit that, you know, it's like, okay, yes, it's possible. You can pull yourself out of your situation. You can have a positive outlook on life, and you do not have to listen to all those other so-called people that are there to help you when they're really not being very helpful at all. So with that, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed the music and the ads. As we go through life and we become a little bit more proficient, we'll be adding a few different varieties and maybe a little longer, but not too long. Nothing's worse than a buttload of commercials. So with that, we will look to hear talk again in about an hour and 15 minutes. Have a great day.
You have been listening to the McCarthy Project, and remember to always attack life and sports.